this meeting of the joint work session of the Board of Commissioners and the City of Depot Bay City Council in order. First item is introductions, and I guess we'll start in the middle and work our way clockwise. How's that? So I'm Doug Hunt. I'm County Commissioner, and I have the honor of being Chair for the remainder of the calendar year.
So I'm Brady Weiner, Superintendent, City of Depot Bay.
I'm Barbara Luff, Mayor of Depot Bay.
Jeff Weisman, City Recorder for Depot Bay.
Christy Whitaker, Recorder for Lincoln County.
Okay, so Debbie Callender, City Councilor.
Kathy Schwartz, City Council.
Bill Hall, County Commission.
And you may have heard Commissioner Hall saying that Commissioner Thompson is attending an event. We expect him here somewhere around 6:30, so he will get here as quickly as he can. All right, then we have five items on our agenda, four items, I guess, not counting the agenda. And first item is a presentation will be made by representatives of our Health and Human Services area. It's about the marijuana prevention and education program, and follow up that with a discussion on the marijuana taxes. And I'll let the ladies introduce themselves for the record.
So I'm Nicole Fields, right now I'm the Interim Public Health Director for Lincoln County Public Health. And then Jess, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name is Jess Palma. I'm a Health Education Specialist for Lincoln County Public Health.
If we had talked 2 minutes longer, Commissioner Thompson would have been here at the beginning.
Perfect. Where do you want us? Are we okay to stay here, or do you want us to come up?
It's probably better, I think, enough for recording of the meeting if we could come on up.
I'm stealing your
This is the first time.
So thank you very much for having us tonight. We are here, of course, because we have some concerns. As we know, with the legalization of marijuana, of retail marijuana or recreational marijuana, you know, it's not uncommon for us to see more use of it. And the reason that we have concerns, we've shared a little fact sheet with you, and right at the top, you know, you can see our county's statistic, and this is something that's collected each year. And the data is showing us that about half of our 11th graders have used marijuana. You know, and when you're looking at 8th grade, it's just about 13% of 8th graders have used marijuana. And when we break it down to just in the last 30 days, that's about 20% of our 11th graders have used marijuana. So that's about once a month use. And just to make it a little more simple, that's 1 in 5 11th graders are using monthly. The reason that we are concerned about youth using marijuana is because we know that our brains aren't done developing until about age 25. And so when we're introducing substances to a developing brain or a developing body, there's a lot of adverse effects that it can have, you know, and it can be limiting. One thing that we know is true is when a substance is legalized, the perception of harm goes down. And so what the perception of harm means is if you think something is really risky or you think there could be some negative consequences, you're less likely to use a substance. So if we're thinking a substance or an activity is not very risky, we're a lot more likely to be using it, right? So we want to keep any substance out of our youth's hands and out of their bodies and out of their minds for as long as possible. We also know that with substances, the sooner that you start using one, the more likely you are to have issues with it later on in life. Another point that I wanted to make was with the perception of harm. What you see in 8th grade is, in the right-hand corner, we have a little graph right there that kind of breaks down the perception of harm. And what you'll see is it moves significantly up once our 11th graders are once they're going from 8th grade to 11th grade. And this is really relevant because if we had the tobacco numbers for you, you would see that use of tobacco would increase a little bit as students are moving from 8th grade to 11th grade, but marijuana and alcohol increase significantly. And things to think about, you know, if you're flipping through a magazine or you're driving down the highway, you know, in that magazine you're seeing let's be the generation to end smoking. You know, this is the reason smoking is bad. You're seeing billboards and everything. But when you're thinking about marijuana, you know, you're seeing the sandwich board, like, ooh, $5 gram Friday, or, you know, come get your free t-shirt, and you're seeing a lot of different advertising. You're not seeing the same sort of publicity, you know, that other substances are seeing. So with this money, some of the things that we've talked about that we could do, one of our unique advantages is that we can really tailor it to Lincoln County because we are a unique population and we have unique needs. You know, our community doesn't look the same as Portland or other areas. And so, you know, we can work really specifically with our population. We could work with our youth, get their involvement. We could work with pregnant or breastfeeding mothers. We know that THC can be passed to the fetus when the mother is pregnant. We also know that THC can be passed through breast milk. We could also, you know, target the Spanish-speaking population, working with different parents or professionals. It's really up to us to mold what would look best in Lincoln County. And there's a lot of evidence-based and best practice programs that we can look at and help to meet our needs. In other areas, they've held marijuana town hall safety meetings, you know, where they have a health education specialist or another expert come, you know, that parents or other people can ask questions and get information right there. We can be working on some policy changes, maybe around advertising, you know, or whatever would fit each town's needs, you know, whatever it is the issue they would like to work on. You know, I had mentioned that student involvement, so working either with advertisements or doing school assemblies, whatever's really going to mobilize that is going to get a lot of buy-in and have a big impact. And we would really like to get prevention education in that curriculum in all of our schools. You know, and this could address all substances, but also marijuana, since we know that, you know, it's not being talked about the same way that other substances are.
I guess the only other thing I would add is that marijuana legalization is very new. It's only been legal for a few years here. So we haven't really been able to get a lot of data on the harm this long term. When tobacco was really, really prevalent, you know, you think back to the 60s and 70s, even the 80s, people were smoking on airplanes, in their workplace. There just wasn't a lot known about it. And so the contraindications and the advertising to combat tobacco use didn't come about until it was really, really late for a lot of people. So what we're trying to do in prevention is really get ahead of these issues and work to educate people on marijuana now so they can make informed decisions. You know, we obviously want to keep it out of the hands of youth, but we also want to educate our adult population too, because a lot of people think they hear a legal substance and they don't necessarily associate it with, like, all right, alcohol is legal for occasional use, it's fine. But, you know, if you're a chronic, long-time user, there are going to be some health effects. And we just really want to kind of have our voice heard in the discussion, at least, so people can make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually another really excellent point. You know, marijuana, back in, you know, the 70s and the 80s, that was the THC content, which is the component that gets you high. That was about 4% on average. But now if you walk into a retail store or a recreational shop, you're seeing on average about 20 to 30% THC. And then if you're looking into any of the specialty products like the extracts or the oils or, you know, for dabbing, things like that, you're looking at anywhere from 80 to 90% THC. So that's a huge jump, you know, going from 4% to anywhere from 20 to 90%, you know, so things are different now, and the effects very well could be very significant.
Good information. Questions, comments?
I just have one question. Have you done any research to find out where these students or young people are getting their pot from? I certainly know among the number of people I know, locals aren't necessarily buying it from pot shops and paying the tax. They just don't. I assume kids can't go into a pot shop because they're not old enough. Where are they getting it?
So from what our research is telling us, that most of them are getting it from an older friend who is able to buy it. The questions in the survey that we get this data from don't address buying it illegally, but we feel like we kind of want to cast a wide net, because even if we're not getting the kids that are buying it from retail locations, they're at least still going to get the education. So they might think twice about buying it illegally, they might think twice about some of the health effects, no matter where they're buying it. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Any other questions or comments? Mr. Bowen.
Switch us?
Don't leave, ladies.
We'll be right here. We're just going to take up less space up front.
Wayne Delmont, County Council.
There's a reason for the conversation. Maybe you're going to go that direction.
Right, go ahead. So the reason the presentation was made today is actually we've been having this conversation with all the cities in the county that passed a tax, a local tax on marijuana, because our idea behind this was to do this education piece as a pilot project in which we had participation from the cities with the county. The county's already going to place a placeholder in our budget to provide funding for these particular activities. And then we want to have a conversation with the cities to see how much you're taking in on taxes and how much you might be willing to provide to participate in this pilot program. So we've already had this discussion with Newport, Ballport, and Yaha's, and we'll do the same with Lincoln City in Toledo coming up here pretty quickly. So one of the things we did learn in this process is the state changed its formulas for the distribution of marijuana tax. It was already complicated in the first place, but it got even more complicated. The state also does not allow us to differentiate between the money that we're provided on a statewide basis and those that they may collect for us on the local tax. And I'm not sure if you guys have a state collecting your local tax. You do. We're the same thing that we're doing. So it's a little bit confusing as to what's the local portion and what's the state portion doing this. But so there is an ask associated with this, and what we'd like to do is at least hear some feedback if that's something you'd be willing to discuss with us. And then we'll work out some details as we go through the next few weeks in terms of putting together our budgets, our collective budgets, to see how much we can put together to and how it makes sense to the program to do.
And again, this is actually an idea I think that Commissioner Thompson originally came up with. But the idea is a couple of things. First of all, at this early stage in the process, I don't think any of us have an idea of what the expected revenue is or will be from the marijuana tax. Second of all, if we're able to pool our resources, maybe we can have a stronger voice and a more unified program as far as we try to address some of those issues. And then the third point, at least from my standpoint, is that again, we don't know how much the revenue is going to be, and we hopefully can supplement that maybe with other funds and, we'll be helping the cities build a funding source that can really be more effective. So that's kind of the rationale behind it, and we would certainly appreciate any help. Certainly understand
sure
if you maybe want to discuss it, let us know.
Yeah, we'll make sure it gets on the agenda in the very near future.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on that? All right, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is affordable housing. I believe that was an item that the county put on the agenda, and I guess I'll start out with some comments. And I think many of you may know that I'm an economist, and when you look at the housing situation, it's obviously an imbalance of supply and demand, and normal economics says over time that that economic formula will balance out and you reach an equilibrium. Well, I moved here in 1988, and I can tell you that the housing situation was as bad then as it is now. So clearly that economic theory isn't working, so you have to ask, you know, why? And I think there are a lot of different issues, but certainly when you look statewide, well, even nationally, for a variety of different reasons, the number of homes that were being built started to decline in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, and that has eventually accumulated to where we have a serious shortage. And if there was a cure-all, I think we all would have found it. And the fact that not only is our county, but there's a state and nation struggling with some of these issues indicates that it's a very complex situation. But you know, I have a menu of different things that the county is doing to try to help this. And I think I liken it to eating an elephant. You know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time. So hopefully through a variety of different small steps and different approaches, we're able to address the situation, certainly, within the county. And I guess the last thing I'd say is from the, we have a director of planning, I think I saw him. He was in the audience.
I snuck in.
Your highness.
Inside, yes.
You know, when you look at the philosophy behind planning in housing, and you look at the land use laws of the state of Oregon, the idea is that you concentrate the residential housing within the city limits, within the urban growth boundary, because that's where the services are available, and that's where it's easiest for people to access the different services, whether they be public or private. So, again, when you start saying, let's do a lot of building of homes and development outside of the urban growth boundary, that's really contrary to one of the philosophies of effective planning. So, nonetheless, again, as I've indicated, the county is doing a variety of things, and I might just start with the fact that we worked with the city of Newport. The city of Newport approved some ordinances that waived property taxes for low-income housing and multifamily low-income housing. There's some parameters and some criteria, but the Board of Commissioners approved a similar ordinance, so we're trying to support the development of those housing and by waiving property taxes. We supported the pilot project for easing the urban growth boundary and easing it for strictly for the purposes of affordable housing. And this is a project that is being considered by Yahats. And certainly there are opportunities for other areas within the county. It's really a state-driven project. But the idea is okay, is there a way to expand the urban growth boundary? Again, trying to make it easier to build homes, but again, within that urban growth boundary, which is consistent with planning. Some other things that are going on. The county has, either through property tax relief on other projects or through actual funding of different activities, the Aqua Vista project in Yahats has gotten some property tax relief. The Sadamon project in Walport, Ridge Apartments in Lincoln City, Pelican Place in Newport, and a new project, the Fisterra. I never was good at foreign language. It's probably English. My wife would say I'm not good at that either. Anyhow, that's a project in Yahats that are all projects that the county has supported either through the property tax relief or some sort of funding. And I believe the Fisterra project is also a LIFT project.
Correct.
And LIFT is, again, a statewide program. It's Local Innovation Fast Track program, and the state put aside $100 million where developers could apply to the state for funding to help with those projects. So the Fisterra project in Yahats is an example of a LIFT program, which again is a program available through the state that we certainly support. We've also fund directly through our nonprofit social allocation program, Habitat for Humanity, which I think is an effective way to have families build sweat equity in their homes. And that program also perpetuates the low-income aspect of those properties, which I think is a concern as you look at subsidizing housing and creating a better supply. How do you keep that low cost going forward? Samaritan House, my sister's place, Family Promise are again all projects that provide some sort of housing support to families in the county. Proud Ground is another organization. I believe Commissioner Hall is directly involved in that. Proud Ground has developed two projects in Lincoln City. There are five more projects. These are housing sites,
individual
housing residents that are being developed for low-cost housing. There are three on the drawing board for three for Newport, two for Lincoln City, and then the Wilder project, which some of you may be familiar with in the South Beach area, is contemplating five or six more low-income housing through the Proud Ground project. I guess the last couple of thoughts I have is certainly there was a discussion, I believe, in the AHATS where the question was raised is why doesn't the county allow tiny homes? Actually, the county does allow tiny homes. It's simply a matter of presenting a building plan that meets the county code, which primarily deals with health, safety, and welfare issues, which are really uniform. As long as you're able to present, or the developer is able to present a plan that meets those requirements, tiny homes are welcome. And then we're in the development of our budget for next year, and there's discussion about placing some $60,000 in the budget to support homeless activities. $20,000 each would be allocated to Lincoln City, Newport, and Gulfport in an effort to work with those cities to develop housing, and particularly address the homelessness issue and housing with those funds. So I think that, as I said, is kind of a menu of the different things that we're trying to do to support better housing, low-income housing throughout the county. Again, it takes a cooperative effort with that thought. There's a housing task force that we'll meet tomorrow. I believe it's organized by the city of Newport. It involves county and city managers, other stakeholders, and the tribe in an effort to get more heads in the room and talk about how are the different ways that we can approach the challenge of housing in the county. So, serious issue and one that we're involved in many different aspects. So, comments, questions, or fellow commissioners?
I think you hit the high point, sir.
Yes, go ahead.
So with Hatfield doing their big expansion, how are you addressing those students coming in?
That is actually being addressed by the university, OSU there. They realize that, as is the case with any student housing, that you need to develop housing dorms.
Right.
And they are working, I believe, with the city of Newport to develop dormitory housing for those students.
I think it's 300 units on the edge of Wilder. Maybe Commissioner Thompson, I know he works real close.
Yeah, it's going to be out of the tsunami zone. That's one of the things that we want to make sure the housing gets the high ground and the logical places. Just south of town where you see the old boat sitting there alongside the road. Well, back up on that hill is the Wilder. And I don't know if they struck a deal. It's, I haven't heard about it recently, but it sounded like they were getting close. So there'll be some kind of student dormitory housing, and then it's not a bad walk if you go down the back way down to the
tube. No, it's beautiful.
Yeah. And so it also makes it, just makes it so that if there are students there, over half the time they're not on the campus, and over half the time they have the chance of being out of the tsunami zone.
I think it's important to note that the university administration, I mean, right on from President Ray down, have recognized that they have an obligation to provide that housing. So I think it's been something that's been recognized and being addressed certainly for a couple of years. Other questions? Affordable housing? All right. Move on to an update on the Stepping Up initiative. Commissioner Hall?
Okay, glad to do that, Mr. Chair. I will try and give a very brief overview, and then if anybody has any comments or questions. Stepping Up was launched nationally in 2015, a partnership of the National Association of Counties, Council of State Governments, and the American Psychiatric Association. In essence, it is an attempt to reduce the number of people with mental illness who get stuck in the criminal justice system. The estimate right now is coast to coast. 2 million people are behind bars primarily because of mental illness, addiction, or trauma rather than criminal intent. To localize it a bit, our jail has 161 beds, which are virtually always full, and our Lincoln County Sheriff's Office estimates that any time 30% of those inmates have been diagnosed with a mental illness, and one-third of that number have been diagnosed with a severe and persistent mental illness. So the reason Stepping Up is driven at the county level is that so many of these services are delivered by at the county level, not only by sheriffs and police, but by mental health programs, by whether they be county or hospital programs, private providers, and to really try and get a new and better alignment going, especially between the justice and behavioral health centers. So we're trying to build on some things we've already got, like drug court, mental health court, sheriff and community corrections have had all their people trained up in a program called Mental Health First Aid. Sheriff is also trying to accelerate crisis intervention training, which is a more sophisticated week-long training to give officers in the field a tools to de-escalate a mental health situation. We have secured a grant for mobile crisis mental health services. Our parole and probation community corrections program over the last year plus has rolled out some post-release housing, 22 beds for men, 6 beds for women, and that's for all eligible folks, not just folks dealing with mental health and addictions issues, so that's a significant share of the population. The sheriff, as you probably have heard, has a levy on the ballot to really beef up the public safety system. Among the things that it will do that tie in directly with this effort is adding a second inmate counselor in the jail. Right now we have one to work with the 161 population, and of course he is kept very busy trying to deal with the population, dealing with those many challenges. This would add a second person. It would also add 2 pretrial release specialists. Until about 15 years ago, State of Oregon had one person who worked in our court system who would basically supervise people who were booked and then released pending trial. But that went away in state budget cuts, and it's clear it's not coming back at the state level. So hopefully by, you know, if this levy passes, we'll have that at the local level, and not only will they just kind of keep tabs on people, make sure they show up for their court appearances, but also, if appropriate and if possible, connect them with services in the community so that we're not, as somebody said, just releasing them to the bushes. And not only existing services, but we've got a small work group trying to get a pilot pretrial transitional housing program going. If people are arrested and, you know, they're homeless, that maybe they could live in a supervised setting. It'll probably start small, trying to rent maybe a 3-bedroom house, but try and grow it from there. We're talking with partners like Samaritan Health System about ideas. And again, this isn't a done deal, but it's just in the discussion stage. They're working on a pilot telepsychiatry program, and they have an interest in possibly adding the jail as another one of their pilot sites in the county. So that could supplement the one and hopefully 2 inmate counselors that will be in the jail. So basically, it's to try and, I would say, you know, build on existing resources, get some new resources in place, but really create a new culture of collaboration beyond what we've had before. I think we've had a good culture in this county before, but it can be better, and we've got people thinking, planning in new ways. So that's it in a nutshell, and I'd be glad to take questions from the council if there are any, or my colleagues. Yes, sir.
Excuse me. I don't know if it falls into stepping up an issue, but at the last two previous LPSCC meetings.
And then spoke about the Safety Coordinating Council.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Sure. It was discussed about having an automated phone system for calls to folks that are due to have
this. Yes. That's something that would, that hasn't happened yet, but that's something hopefully that if we get these pretrial release off positions funded, that would be part of their work to get that system set up and programmed and just...
So that'll be up to the levy then?
Yeah, unless unless we can find, you know, perhaps, you know, I know the sheriff recognizes the value of it, that if there's another way to figure out to fund it, but I think if the levy goes through, then that becomes pretty much a sure thing.
Thank you.
You bet.
Good question. All right, question? Okay. We'll move on to Midcoast Water Partners. Commissioner Thompson.
Well, it's with Midcoast Water Partners is making a water plan, and it's taken a long time. It's a slow-moving process. I've said on it that I've kind of moved back because I've got so many other things that are moving faster, but it's something the city should be aware of. I was hoping they'd get the discussion of Rocky Creek a lot quicker than they have, and really what we can do to consolidate our water problems, because we have multiple water problems throughout the state. We've spent a lot of time assessing those problems and things that need to be done to have a fully adequate plan. There's three places that were financed, two over in Eastern Oregon, I believe, and the coast, because if you're not aware, we can't hold water well and we can't drill wells down to get it. Most of our water drains off. So we have to come up with some kind of a regional water supply, and in my opinion, one of the few rivers that doesn't bear salmon is Rocky Creek. And so ultimately, I think that's what this turns out to be. So I want to bring it up to Depot Bay and make sure you're aware of it. Not that you have to participate in every meeting, but you need to be aware of what's going on.
The superintendent and I are very aware, and we have been attending meetings.
Good. Just want to make sure. So, there's a lot of meetings.
Yes,
there's a lot of meetings. Good way to get good attendance.
And I'm trying to lose weight. So, that's what's going on. It's not like you're there, but I just wanted to remind people that to watch that one, especially since you're close to what could be a potential. Then there is one subject that isn't on here that I brought up to Wayne. I happened to look in the newspaper and I saw a picture of an old boat and a bunch of garbage in Depot Bay. And things that you're worried about around here are try to clean up some of the properties around and garbage in the area. Wayne, do you want to come up and talk a little bit about it? I've been pushing on this for a long time in the county because I'm a believer that if you don't address it early, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. So we've had a problem with not having an enforcement officer. So I'll let Wayne go.
Right, and actually it's an interesting situation because we've been approached by a number of communities saying, can you help us? Can you provide some additional code enforcement services for our communities? And what the commissioners ended up doing is we are funding a position. We actually have developed a job description and are currently recruiting someone to fill that particular position. But we're also taking a look at the kind of tools we've got for doing code enforcement, which is a little bit of a difficulty. We use the kind of normal process of trying to use the courts. If we can't use other means to get to resolution of these particular issues, we use the courts. And that can oftentimes be a slow and difficult process because they have so many criminal matters and other more pressing civil matters that to get to the specific code enforcement activities, they take a fairly low priority. So we're doing some examination of what some other communities have done. I'm not sure if you have a municipal court in Depot Bay. I don't think you do.
We don't have a municipal court. However, we have been actively dealing with this very issue. In fact, within the last month, we shut down one property completely, and we're just about to shut down a second one, and there's a third one we're looking at. It is difficult because we don't have a formal.
Yeah, we've been going in and absorbing the cost of cleaning up and then dealing with the property owners.
And that's a very difficult situation, coming up with the money to do that. So we're exploring some alternatives, and we will be continuing to look at different ways that we can do the code enforcement. But
and I think we would be very interested in hearing what those alternatives were, and maybe somehow we can work together.
Sure.
If you have, I don't know, do you have a committee?
It's mostly folks.
Committee of one.
I worked out of that.
But we are, you know, obviously the code enforcement current activities occur within our various departments.
Yes.
And really to have somebody who does this and eats, sleeps, and breathes this is going to make a huge difference. We think when we do this. And a code enforcement official will actually reside in the sheriff's office. It'll be, and not a sworn officer, but it'll be someone coming out of the sheriff's office. So we think there's some, there'll be some steps we can take initially to get things underway, but we again want to look at some of the alternatives for how we actually get enforcement. The best way usually is to work with property owners, and quite often we do find that when you approach the property owner and discuss the problem and see where it's going to go, there's resolution that can occur before you have to take any formal action. So we'll keep you informed.
I'll make this. I sympathize with you guys, and there's throughout the county there's a lot of old cars, and there's certain residences that decrease the property value of everybody around them, plus create health hazards, and we just didn't have the right personnel. And so it's a real challenge for a lot of communities and us too. So ultimately I hope that we get a person in the sheriff's office we can turn to, but then how we intermesh with the cities on that is going to be a challenge too. So, one we're willing to work on, though, and try to help.
And we're willing to work with you if the moment comes when you're putting together some sort of a group who really wants something to happen on that subject.
This, I'm going to jump out and say a little of this is, I've seen, because we have the planning department and the honors department does a great job, but they don't have some place to turn when they run into a problem they can't deal with. And now with BRDs, you can see if we don't do it now, it's just going to be a bigger and more complicated problem to deal with in the future. So we've got to sit down and work together and try to figure it out.
I also think that the enforcement officer, to me, conjures up an image that isn't necessarily one I would hope we see. And that is really, it's a facilitator, somebody that's going to try to work with the property owner, work with, whether it's the city or the county, to try to address the situation, resolve the situation, before you just start, okay, now we got enforcement. So that's an important part of that picture.
Could I interrupt for a minute?
Ma'am.
Could we have the people who are standing in front of the door move down this way or come around this way, because the door has to stay here. Sure.
And for the record, we did try to get a larger facility. We expected there might be a few people to show up, and we weren't able to do so. So apologize for the crank.
There is another chair.
So then, can I go off again on another chair?
You may. The mayor, I understand, has to leave about 6:45.
Well, I will be here that long. So, dredging for the fuel dock, anything changed?
Nothing's changed except we're getting very positive feedback from Washington. And it appears that it will happen, but again, until they show up, we don't know.
So, we'll probably have to go to the Coos Bay dredge to do it. It's been over a year now, and it's getting worse. I can help you in any way. I mean, I've talked to them, and they're well aware of Coos Bay about it. That dredge is being managed by the Port of Coos Bay manager. Have you made any personal contact with him?
I have not, but I do think our
So we have a scheduled appointment with Kate Groff from the court, and strictly about this urgent dredging that we need, especially for our fuel dock. That's 24. Yeah. So we've got a lot of harbor committee members, we've got city council, myself and staff, we're all going to meet down there.
Okay.
But she's bringing several representatives too, and I can send you an email too.
Send me an email. Yes. Between campaigns and everything else.
Okay.
It's a little tight right now.
Yeah. We did this meeting with her last year too, and it was shortly after that we got the judging. So
yeah.
Feeling positive.
Sounds like you're talking on the right people.
Thank you, Terry. We really appreciate that support.
Anything else? I think there's no other business for the work session. We'll adjourn that. And